a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. I'm Emily. I'm from Virginia, and I'm still a moderate Republican.
I'm DJ, also from Virginia. I'm an economic conservative and an inebriated independent.
I am Greg. I am from Cincinnati, Ohio, where your vote counts more, and I'm your liberal Democrat.
And I'm Jonah. I'm an independent from Maryland, and that's all that I know that I am.
Make sure you find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, plus blogs and commentary. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And if you really like us, please rate and review us on iTunes and share us, because it would mean we would love you more. So anyways, guys, what are we thinking? What's going on this week?
Well, we still have nothing much really happened this week. This has been a kind of a down week. We don't have any more primaries until next week. It's been very slow, and there's been is that right?
That wasn't exactly that there was a there were primaries on Tuesday.
Oh, there were. I guess so. Gosh, I'm thinking. Yeah, so there were two primaries on Tuesday.
Yeah,
for the Democrats. There were, goodness.
And there was one for the Republicans. So let's focus on the Democrats.
Oh, let's focus. I forgot.
It was a split decision. Mrs. Clinton won very narrowly in Kentucky, and she lost not very narrowly in Oregon. No real surprise that she can't carry Portland, which I think initially was called the City of Western Vermont before they changed its name. For me the interesting thing was the fact that everyone, apparently the whole Nevada fracas is this is everybody's, this appears to be everybody's excuse for turning on Bernie, which I think is kind of silly myself, because I mean, hey, it's Las Vegas. You know, somebody picked up a chair. They used to bury people in the desert in Las Vegas, so I don't really think this is an improvement, folks. Come on now. But I know Greg you're a Hillary guy.
I am a Hillary guy. I'm not an anti-Bernie guy, though. I like Bernie, but I'm not an anti. Excuse me. I'm a Hillary supporter. His supporters are driving me nuts, though. Anything.
I was totally pegging you as a Bernie guy early on, too.
Oh yeah.
I am liberal enough, and without a doubt, it's the only thing is I can do math, and I like to win. I'm pragmatic enough that I see where this is going. All those things that Bernie's done, I'm really into. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I love the fact that he's pushing the conversations left. I'm for it. I love the fact that this was not a coronation, that this wasn't a gimme, that he's energized the youth. And I love all those things about Bernie, without a doubt. If you ever hear me say anything disparaging, many times it's in jest, because I really have a lot of respect.
We have a Kardashian-sized butt coming, don't we?
No. It's just his supporters drive me nuts for the fact that they do not understand how primaries work. And they cry foul every time that they go, oh, well, why aren't they all open primaries? Well, that's not how the primary system works. Or, you know, superdelegates should vote for their states. Well, that's not how primaries work. Well, they should, but they don't.
Yeah. Well, what I think is going to happen, and this is, you know, if Kevin were here, he would be having a near coronary about how supposedly Bernie Sanders is doing everything imaginable to help Donald Trump, and I would tell him that what he really needed to do is share some of the drink that I'm having. But if Kevin's not here, the simple fact of the matter is, I really think the Democrats just have to sit back and wait until California for a couple of reasons. One, California is the last big state to come in, and things will pretty much, the counting will be over after that. Secondly, I think California will be a reminder to Bernie's backers, that there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who just aren't with them. I mean, the biggest thing that I think, the fact that Sanders has managed to win the states that he has won, has led them to sort of forget the fact that he was getting his ass kicked all throughout February and early March.
Right.
You know, a good thumping in California, which is, I think, what she is about to give him, will remind them that they are a minority within the Democratic Party. They're a minority that should be listened to, and I think they're a minority that will be listened to because no one over there, well, there are some Democrats who are stupid, but none of them are actually running the campaigns. They will step back and go, okay, it's clear now Mrs. Clinton is the choice of Democrats, so let's figure out how to piece this together. Because as I've said before, I've said it again, the arguments between Mrs. Clinton and Mrs. Sanders is largely, in my opinion, an argument about degree. How fast can the party go to the left? How fast can they expand government size, scope, and cost? It's not the sort of divisions that are leading people on the Republican side to leave the party or come up with some sort of weird split or other thing. That's not happening over there.
No.
I have a feeling that once California's over and everybody just takes a deep breath, they'll have a month to patch things up, and I think they will patch things up.
Well,
that's just me.
Right, right. I was actually told by several people on the interwebs today when I brought up, you know, Hillary's winning by almost 3 million votes. They said, well, that's not true because we're not counting caucus votes and we're not doing this and you don't understand math and things. And I had to pull out all these interesting things. And I'm like, no, it is true. She's thumping him. I mean, just thumping him in the popular vote. And every time I explain superdelegates, and even if we did give him superdelegates per state, she would still be winning. It's not going to happen. But once California's over, and once, because I honestly don't believe he will run as an independent. I don't think he...
No.
No.
He's not going to do that.
Mm-mm. Once that happens, once there's a couple weeks where he goes, look, we did what we set out to do. We have this wonderful movement. Let's win. Let's stop Trump. That's more important. Then, you know, it'll be great. And the party will show their respect to him at the convention. It's not going to be like Ron Paul four years ago. I mean, they're not going to shut him out completely like the Republicans did. So let me ask you, go ahead.
Well, here's my question. So coming from the Sanders camp, one of the complaints that they have is that the whole primary process, state to state, is kind of a mess. And we hear this a lot with Nevada, but we've also heard it in a lot of other states where the Sanders supporters in particular and the Trump supporters on their side will talk about these rules are ridiculous. The game is rigged. There's a coronation waiting to happen, and it's just made to be very confusing, and it doesn't make any sense. Now, we all pay attention to politics, and I bet we all know what the rules are for our primaries. Do you think that if you're someone who maybe shows up in the general, but not really in the primary, but this time you really got motivated for Trump or Sanders, do they have a point?
I will say no, and I will say no for this reason. I want to be careful about how I say this, despite how intoxicated I am, because I've had quite a bit of the whiskey. But none of that changes the fact that the campaigns should be aware of this. Now, and I can't speak for the Sanders folks, but I know the Trump campaign was thoroughly unaware of how caucuses worked, and they didn't care. And to their credit, they turned that weakness into an advantage by basically screaming the fixes in everywhere they could, and that worked. I don't think it's going to work as well for Sanders people because, well, for a whole bunch of reasons. But the point I'm getting to is it's the responsibility of the campaigns to let their supporters know how these things work. And if you are somebody who says, hey, I want to help Bernie Sanders at the state convention, and it's too late, what the supporter should be telling you is, look, sorry, it's too late. You can't help in your own state, but you could help in another state by giving us some money and letting us use that money for gas so that somebody can go to this convention in this state where they're actually where things are still open. That's what you do as a campaign. You find other ways for supporters to help you. If they can't give you their money, then they give you their time. You find something for them to give to the campaign. My guess is the Sanders folks probably didn't do some of that because they probably, to be honest, I don't really think the Vermont senator expected he would be in it this long.
Yeah.
I think he's done a lot better than he thought he would do. So this was one where the support really ran out ahead of the organization. The organization didn't know what to do. And unfortunately, they still didn't know what to do. They still don't know what to do because they're making these whining, they're whining and complaining instead of saying, oh, okay, these are people who can't help us in state X. Let's figure out how to leverage them and help us in state Y.
Right. And
that
actually,
they did not do.
I can speak for that personally. I have a lot of friends who tried to, who volunteered in Kentucky, which is literally 20 minutes away from me. And they were volunteering for the Sanders campaign weeks ago, weeks and weeks ago, and maybe even months ago. And the campaign was like, yeah, we don't have anything for you, and we don't have lists, and we don't have walk lists. And even like 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, when they were like, hey, can we go out? They had massive amounts of people, and yet no organization, because were they ready? Did they think, you know, long term? Did they think they were going to make it to Kentucky? Probably not. You know,
probably not.
Probably
not.
No.
I don't think that.
You know,
yeah, they. I didn't. They probably didn't think they were going to make it this far.
Right.
I don't think anybody thought they were going to make it this far. I think the focus has been on the mess on the Republican side so much that we don't. There is a lot of anger and a lot of disappointment on the Democratic side. I frankly think that the president sort of oversold what he could do, and he's not paying for it because obviously he's had his two terms and he's out. But I think the party is paying for it a little.
Yeah.
And we have seen this, MU and I have seen this on the Republican side, where folks overpromise, they get their two terms, and then their successor candidates are left essentially paying the bill for the party. And
absolutely.
I think that is what is happening now on the Democratic side. The question is, can they handle it better than the Republicans did? Because the Republicans totally effed it up.
Right.
And that's something that we'll have to see.
Right. And the president's approval ratings are higher than ever right now. I mean, they're almost at 50%.
Well, because he's not been a part of the campaign.
Right, because he hasn't been part of this campaign. That's the point. Just because he's not.
He sits there and smiles.
Right.
He sits there and smiles, and everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's right.
He's not part of this. I mean, this is.
He's not part of this madness.
I mean, when they look at the candidates and they go, oh, do you remember President Obama? He's not these guys. That's great. I love that guy. Remember that? I love that guy.
16 years later, we are reliving that, and it's a sad. It's really sad that Kevin's not here, but we are reliving that old Clinton skit from Saturday Night Live. Do we need a president?
Oh, speaking of SNL skits, did you guys see the Bernie and Hillary at the bar skit?
Yes.
How awesome was that? So for those of you guys who have not seen it, basically, you know, Hillary's in the bar, you know, reveling in her success. Thank you, DJ, for the glass. And Bernie's just over in the corner, and they just are lambasting and picking at themselves. It is awesome. What did you guys think?
My favorite line was when they were ordering beers. And Bernie says, I want something revolutionary. Fresh, something for the young people. And Hillary says, give me something no one likes, but we'll get the job done.
Does anybody feel bad for Bernie? Can I just honestly ask that? Does anybody feel bad
no.
for
Bernie? No.
Whoa, stop.
I do.
No.
I do.
No.
I'm not going to feel bad for Bernie. Let me tell you why. I was very close to Delegate Bob Marshall when he ran for U.S. Senate in 2008. I was one of the first bloggers who came out in his favor against Jim Gilmore. I emailed back and forth with him and his wife. He lost that nomination. It was a convention nomination. It was essentially a caucus. He lost that by less than 0.1%.
Ugh.
That's how close that was. It was an earthquake. And I remember talking with Delegate Marshall and talking with his wife afterwards, and just how painful that was, that they were to come this close. Bernie's not going to come that close. He's not going to have all those sorts of what ifs surrounding him. He is going to get waxed in California, and then he's going to recognize what his role is. He is not going to have that kind of very close defeat. I'm not going to feel sorry for Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders has had 26 years in Congress, and he will have more. He'll have 28 years in Congress, and that's assuming he doesn't run again in 2018, and he probably will. So, no, I don't feel sorry for Bernie Sanders. Gosh. He ran one heck of a campaign, and he's going to have some influence at the convention. But, you know, after what I saw happen to Delegate Marshall, and those are the kind of people that I will feel some sympathy for.
But
not
you,
for Bernie Sanders.
But do you guys not think, I mean, you know, devil's advocate here, do you guys not think that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was kind of crappy to Bernie just a little bit?
Oh, yeah, she's a dick.
Yeah. Go on, Jonah.
No.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, so, firstly, she's an ass. But to answer the original question...
No. Can you put it in some sort of empirical
I drink
term?
To that, Jonah.
No, I'm not going to pretend that she's a valid human. She's given up on that. No, but to go back... When I think about Bernie Sanders now, I'm actually not sure what emotion it is that I feel. And I don't think it's that I'm feeling sorry for him, because he's accomplished a hell of a lot. But I definitely, especially this last week and a half, 2 weeks, it definitely feels like he really doesn't know what he's doing, and the tone has changed and the language has changed. So I don't know how I feel. But I know that it's almost my what's great about Debbie Wasserman Schultz right now, as a delegate from representative from Florida and head of the Democratic National Committee, she has a primary challenger that Sanders has endorsed, and that's fantastic. But if we want to go to this idea, and I don't know that I agree with it, but if we want to go with this idea that all these new people in the Sanders camp that are very passionate for him, but don't know the rules and don't know how to vote or what direction the sun comes up, but they really love Bernie Sanders, then of course Wasserman Schultz has kind of antagonized all of them by being an ass and by not being impartial, you know, by pretending she is and then not behaving as though she is, and then being snippy and being an ass. So I think that this is really her own making. It's very different from the way Rince Priebus has been behaving, who is like really presiding over the burning of Rome.
No.
And
Rince Priebus is merely a different kind of ass.
But his behavior,
okay,
but like,
so
you look in, I look in his eyes and I
more
see
hair,
him.
More acne, but just a different kind of ass. I'm
so
sorry.
So I have a funny thought, and this is just, you know, pure just craziness, but you know, I just had this imagery of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Rince Priebus at a bar somewhere, you know, Cleveland or Philly, saying, "Hey, we're going to put our conventions in the Northwest and let those towns burn to the ground, you know, because, you know, in the North, they'll rebuild it again. It's cool. They were steel towns. So we're putting our conventions in the North. You on board?" Yep. That's how it went.
Speaking of bar, I'll be right back.
Well, I mean, just the difference between those two for me is that before Trump was the presumptive nominee, Priebus really looked like he had no idea what to do, and his, at least the public perception, my perception of him, was that he was really hoping someone would tell him what was going to happen because he couldn't shape anything. And maybe Wasserman Schultz saw that and said, "I will not lose control of this. Sanders, you're going to do what I say." And then, you know, she started picking fights where she shouldn't. And so they're both, maybe they are both in a very crappy position, and they'll be known as the two that were in charge when the whole thing fell apart. But I think they're behaving very differently about it.
Yeah, she wanted to put a little bit more control. I mean, Priebus is just sitting there going, sure. Yeah. Oh, is that happening now? Sure. Oh, Trump's making penis jokes? Okay. Sure. And it's all going to hell. And everyone's going, are you going to let him talk like that? No, I'll go talk to him. Sure. And it's they're like parents, where one parent is has to be the bad guy, and one is just going to say, I don't know. It just shakes their head. She yeah. wanted to be the tough one. And unfortunately, it's biting her in the ass. You know, when the kids, when they split up and the kids have to choose one of them, they're all going to go with Priebus. So
the breakup, if you will.
The breakup, yeah. I think, however, no matter, even if Sanders does endorse DWS, challenger in the primary, she's still, I think, going to win the primary.
Oh, it's already a done deal. He's already endorsed.
Yeah, right. But even still, I think she's got the money. I think she's won it several times. You know,
I don't have a sense of how popular she is in her district. Is she?
She's won it handedly the last couple of times.
I have a feeling she will safely have another term in Congress. I don't think she's going to be DNC chair. As I understand it, and Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, the nominee selects the party chairman. Am I right about that?
No.
It's not fair. A separate thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's completely separate. No. No. Okay. And thank goodness. Mind. No.
Because who voted for Michael Steele? That's the first question.
Right.
I know the Republicans do it differently.
No.
But if
because
for some reason I thought the
they never would have let Howard Dean in. Yeah.
That's a good point. Okay,
no one liked Dean.
Okay, then let me ask this question. Now, if memory serves, Greg, you were with me in being skeptical of the notion of Elizabeth Warren as a vice presidential nominee.
Oh yeah, there's no way.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think about her? What do you think about her being DNC chairman?
No way.
Really?
No way. No way. Look, she's happy where she is. She loves.
She doesn't have to leave the United States Senate to be DNC chair.
Yeah.
She does not want to raise money. She doesn't want to have to be. Being DNC chair sucks. There's so much compromise. There's so much. Hi, would you. Here, put my name, and I am going to raise $15 million today, and I'm going to go meet these executives. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, they're clubbing seals today. Well, I think we're okay with that. It sucks. And if you ever watch Debbie Wasserman practice her smile, and you just see tears behind it, it's because she is DNC chair. She just loves... Elizabeth Warren loves where she is, because all she does is kicks ass and chews bubblegum. I mean, who am I taking on today? What outrageous thing can I say? And what kind of fan mail can I get? I mean, is someone writing a comic book about me today? Awesome. You know, I mean...
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
Well, speaking of compromise and tears behind a smile...
No, don't say it. Don't say
we
it.
We have... The continuing GOP surrender is apace.
No, we can skip this. We don't need to.
Where even the senior senator from South Carolina is now privately telling people to support Donald Trump. Even Lindsey Graham.
No. My word, no. Say it ain't so.
First of all,
Jonah,
this is just the meanest of rumor and slander, and there's no evidence that our beloved senator would be doing something like this. I mean, it would really call his entire character into question should it be true, and I don't think I could deal with that. So.
I shall not have his good name be sullied like that.
South Carolina.
Don't you dare talk about Lindsey Graham in that voice.
I know. I say we're going to use proper Southern accents for the rest of the show, just in honor of Lindsey Graham. I do say.
I don't know. I think Well, first of all, to say the obvious, it just hurts us all. That this is a possibility.
Wait, my accent or Lindsey Graham saying that?
Both. I mean, you're compounding the pain, really.
My God.
No, I don't know. It's
have we any sanity?
No.
It's very sad. But
The question is not about sanity. The question is about decency, and that's the problem here. Is that essentially? A major political party has basically created a Faustian bargain for itself, and it's signing on the dotted line. We are now supposed to believe that a guy who can call Mexicans rapists and murderers, except for the some who are good people.
The ones that work at Trump Tower.
The ones that work at Trump Tower, exactly. Somebody who... As I think someone described it, has a problem between distinguishing women as sex objects and women as employees, and someone who basically completely either revealed or transformed the Republican Party into the party of big government for white people, is supposed to be a decent guy. These people are, and I actually use this phrase in a blog post I put up on Bearing Drift earlier. These people have become Von Poppenized.
Ooh.
And those of us who are not Von Poppenized have to call it what it is. This is the Von Poppenization of the Republican Party. So I will repeat again, as I said when I was much more sober than I am now, Emily, please, for the love of God, get out now.
Who watched the Megyn Kelly... interview with Trump this week?
The inside of my eyelids were far more edifying than that interview.
Am I the only one who saw it?
Yeah, you sure not. Are.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh, for shame. For shame on all you scoundrels. I like this. I think I might do this Lindsey Graham thing. the fact that we talk about Lindsey Graham privately doing this, while Megyn Kelly, who is not an official elected GOP person, but I'm pretty sure she holds some GOP office, isn't she? I'm pretty sure. Is now...
No.
Yes, she is the official blonde spokesperson of the Republican Party.
Thank you. I knew that was coming.
No, Emily,
somewhere.
No, Emily, that's Ann Coulter now.
Oh,
I thought it was Dana Perino. Sorry. Either way, she was like, oh, how is it tough? When did you think you could be president? When did you think, tell us about this. Really? I mean, just none of the, like, hey, go after him. Get him. All the questions and everything was like, where is it?
Because let's face it here. If Trump had been honest, then, which of course he never is.
No.
But if he had, then when she asked that question, when did you think you could be president? The proper answer would have been, when I accused you of giving me a hostile question because you were menstruating, and the rubes voted for me anyway.
And my poll numbers skyrocketed.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably when he figured he could be president.
Oh, she didn't ask him anything about, the New York Times article with his problems with women. And, I mean, or if so, it was fleeting. I mean, it was...
Wait, I'm sorry, the what?
There was a New York Times.
Wait, people still read the New York Times?
I actually have...
Well, you learn something new every day.
I have a subscription.
Oh, Jesus.
And I have a...
I know.
I have a digital subscription.
People actually still read the New York Times. Who knew?
I'm actually shocked.
How can you be shocked? I'm a liberal Democrat. Of course I have a subscription.
Just... Pure cost here. Now, I mean, I wouldn't buy it, but it's expensive, isn't it?
No, not for the digital subscription.
Oh.
I understand if Bernie Sanders is elected president, he'll seize the New York Times and offer it free to all Americans.
It will be free. Awesome. That's on his platform, actually.
It's about time.
So let's talk real quick about polling. I didn't want to go down this road, but I kind of wanted to bring this up, and I know you've been having a couple drinks, DJ, but we got to talk about it.
That's quite all right. Throw me the meatball pitch. I'll knock it out of the park.
Okay. So latest polls are showing Trump plus 2 and Trump plus 4.
Nationally?
I'll tell you why.
I'll tell you why.
And Greg doesn't even have to say a word.
Okay.
So Greg, just
I'm waiting.
Find yourself a drink.
Okay.
Find yourself a drink. Here's the deal. In the spring of 2008. When John McCain was the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were still hashing it out, McCain generally held a 4 to 5 point lead in the Rasmussen poll all spring. I'm not asking you to believe Rasmussen. Rasmussen has his problems. My point is this. In early June, the primaries ended. Hillary acknowledged the game was up, and she endorsed Barack Obama. The Democratic Party united. Within 3 days of that event happening, Barack Obama went from 5 points down against John McCain to 5 points up against John McCain because the Republican Party had united. If you look at... I'm not finished yet.
Okay.
If you look at all these... If you look at the Fox News poll, if you look at the Rasmussen poll, which also I think had Trump ahead for a bit, I think still does, they all show that Trump only has between the high 60s to the high 70s of Republicans supporting him. And that's what's important. Because that's his ceiling. He is the presumptive Republican nominee. He's not going to get higher than that number. No one has had him higher than 77% of Republicans in a multiple candidate race. And this will be a multiple candidate race in a way that no other race was. Whereas Mrs. Clinton has a whole bunch of Sanders Democrats who will not say they're voting for her now, but who will say they're voting for her in June and July. These polls are all skewed toward Trump because Trump is the nominee on the Republican side, and Hillary is not yet the presumed nominee on the Democratic side. She's the predicted nominee, but that's not the same thing. I would be shocked, if Donald Trump leads a single poll in the month of July, outside of one that he pays for to totally skew his way. But right now, he's going to look good because he's the only Republican in the race. The Libertarians haven't actually picked their nominee, so that probably helps him a little too. And the Democratic race has not yet been settled. When the Democratic race has been settled, I am convinced Hillary will pull ahead. She'll pull ahead by something outside the margin of error, and she will be at least that far ahead until Election Day. I am convinced of that. Period.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's pretty right.
Mr. Maguire, I may beg to differ on one point. I agree with majority of what you're saying. The only thing I think I'm disagreeing with is that Barack Obama was a more credible candidate at this point in the game, and so was Hillary Clinton, than Bernie Sanders is in the situation with Hillary. So we'll see. But
that doesn't matter.
Okay.
Because Bernie is still in the race. And I would humbly submit to you, as humble as I can be, being from New Jersey, that the fact of the matter is, nobody after mid-April thought Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee. Yes, you might have been closer in delegates to Barack Obama than Sanders is to her now, but there's no way on God's green earth that anybody thought she was going to be the nominee from about mid-April on. We all knew that it was going to be Barack Obama, and it was just a matter of giving her time to figure it out, just like it's giving Sanders time to figure it out. It didn't matter how close she was. We all knew the numbers weren't there. The math wasn't going to stack up. So frankly, the fact that Sanders is farther away from Clinton doesn't matter because he's still in the race. And since he's still in the race, there are enough Democrats who are willing to hold back and who are still essentially holding off the moment where they have to come to terms and recognize that it's either Hillary or Trump. They're not there yet, and they don't have to be there until he backs off. He's not backing off yet. So with all due respect, it doesn't matter how credible you think Sanders is. What matters is how credible Sanders Democrats think he is. And they think he's credible enough, because he's still in the race, that they won't say they're backing Clinton. Once he backs out of the race, they'll come back to Clinton, just as Clinton's Democrats went to Obama.
I love your accent.
Thank you.
It's fabulous. It is quite wonderful.
And I would say that this is the best possible scenario for Hillary Clinton, because, you know, historically, a member of the same party winning the incumbent, you know, with Obama going out and another Democrat taking office, the odds would be against the new Democrat, especially with unfavorables as high as Hillary Clinton has.
Oh, yeah.
But the best thing that she has going for her is that her opponent is Donald Trump, who is worse than anybody ever since we've started looking at humans. And...
I'm pretty sure there was a guy trying to win power in Weimar Germany who was a lot worse than Trump.
That was before polling.
Maybe a little worse.
but I really do think that all that she has to do is kind of quiet down a little bit once the general happens and the conventions are over. And all that we have to do, all that she has to do, is remind people of things that Donald Trump has already said.
Right. She has to make him do the transition between entertainer and politician and say, hey, this isn't a game show anymore. This is a real thing, and kind of push people into that, you know, hey, this has been fun. This has been kooky, but think about what you're really doing here.
His existence has made this election about whether or not he is qualified to be president, not whether Democrats deserve the presidency again, and not even whether she's super qualified, because everyone kind of agrees mostly she understands what the job is. Right. It's all about him now, and there's no way he passes that.
Her issues... I think trustworthiness is still an issue for her, but experience clearly is not.
Yeah.
Because she has experience.
Yeah.
And all she has to do is anybody who does not really like her, anybody who is just never going to vote for her, all she has to do is say, look, if you don't want to vote for me, then vote for Gary Johnson or whoever the Libertarian nominee is. Just don't vote for Trump. And she's fine.
Did anyone watch Meet the Press this morning? No.
No.
Okay. So I'm the only one who reads the New York Times and watches Meet the Press. Go figure. But I was
devoutly praying in church. Thank you.
I listen to National Public Radio. Okay. Son of a bitch.
So
there goes the explicit rating for the week.
So we're watching it, and my wife goes, "Is that Mark Cuban?" And I go, "Yeah, it is." She goes, "What the hell is he doing on Meet the Press?" And I go, "Well," and she goes, "No, they're doing an entire segment on him." And yes, they interviewed him for, like, I would love to say 5 minutes, but it seemed like 45 minutes because he wouldn't stop talking. But no, he's being courted right now, you know, to run as either an independent.
Yeah.
Or they kept asking, "Would you be willing to run as Hillary's vice president?" And he was like, "Oh, well, you know, if I was asked, I would really highly think about that, too." And I kept thinking, Mark Cuban? When did his name even enter the realm of possibility? Because Trump has lowered the bar so far that someone from Shark Tank, another reality show, and a guy...
I would totally vote for Mark Cuban. I so would.
I'm going to ask what really is a serious question.
Yeah.
And I want to note it for the record that I would ask this question if I were sober, which I'm admittedly not.
Sure.
Do none of the rest of you follow the NBA?
Not at all.
I do.
But I know who he is.
Okay, so now I understand. M, you remember what the Dallas Mavericks were before Mark Cuban bought that team, yes?
Crap. Absolute garbage.
Yes, they were awful. To give Greg and Joan an idea, they were so bad that there was actually an editorial cartoon, I actually remember this, that said, where they had the supposed announcer for the Mavericks going, "And now introducing your Dallas, how about them Cowboys, Mavericks." And the next frame is the color guy looking at him like he's nuts and saying, "Hey, I got to do something to get him cheering." The Mavericks were that bad. Yeah. They were awful. They were in the lottery more often than your grandmother throwing her $5 away on pick six tickets.
But do you guys remember
that who owned bad?
Them? Do you guys know who owned them before?
Before Cuban? No, I don't know who owned the Mavericks before Cuban.
Oh!
Donald Trump. Tell me it's Donald Trump.
Hold on. I'm enjoying the moment of knowing something that DJ doesn't. Let me just take that in. Okay, it was Ross Perot and Friends.
No.
Well, that explains a lot.
Oh, he should totally be Vice President. It's legacy.
What we have to realize is, unlike Donald Trump, Mark Cuban is actually a successful businessman who took a high-profile asset and actually made it valuable again.
I've never had a Mark Cuban steak, or went to Mark
because
Cuban
college. Because he doesn't make bad deals like because, that.
Exactly. He doesn't waste his time with that. He took a crappy basketball team and made it a contender. He actually knows what the hell he's doing. Now, I'm not saying I would support him for president or vice president. I don't know him well enough. But I do know that in his chosen fields, he's not too bad, which is a lot better than I could say for Donald Trump. And that's all I'm going to say on the matter.
Yeah, that's cool. No political experience whatsoever.
But here's the thing. I don't dispute that. On both sides of the aisle, it doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't matter if someone has a laundry list of endorsements anymore from the Republican or the Democratic side. People want anything that is the antithesis of that.
I know, and that's kind of worrisome. You know, if I want someone to fix my washing machine, I don't say, well, I kind of want to change. I want someone who has no experience fixing washing machines. No, I want someone with a lot of experience. I want someone who knows the job. If I'm being, you know, defended, if I want a lawyer, I don't go...
And I thought I was an establishment hack. Listen to you, Greg.
No, I am an establishment hack. Because I do believe...
And this brings us...
Believe that we should
have... Drunk guy talking here. This brings us to the irony of the situation. I can't believe that worked. This brings us to the irony of the situation here, in that it may very well be the Libertarian Party that nominates the candidate with the most executive experience if they go with two-term Governor Gary Johnson, who has announced that he is chosen as his potential running mate, one-and-a-half-term in governor of Massachusetts, William Weld.
Really?
As this was happening, yes, that was his choice for vice president. And I can tell you, if my Facebook feed is any indication, that's caused quite a to-do within the Libertarian Party, but we'll put that aside for now. As this was all happening, one of those polls that Emily cited that showed Donald Trump ahead of Hillary Clinton also put Gary Johnson in double digits. It put him at 10%. It was a Fox News poll. And whatever you want to say about Fox News poll, I guarantee you Fox News had no interest in pumping up Gary Johnson, but there he was at 10%. My question is to all of you. Now, I will freely admit, if the Libertarians nominate Gary Johnson for president, I will support him. Mm-hmm. He's my guy. My question is, Jonah, could he be your guy? And Greg and Emily, since Emily still won't leave the party, how much do you think he will take from your nominees? Jonah, you first.
Yes, it would be very easy for me to vote for him for a couple of reasons. But the big one is that I will be voting in Maryland. Maryland will be blue. I view it as throwing my vote away to vote for a Republican or a Democrat for president when it doesn't matter, when the entire state is going to go in one direction, regardless of what I do. What my vote can influence in this state is whether or not a third party can get above the minimum threshold. And that's why, whenever possible, I will vote for a third party.
What is the threshold in your state?
It's fairly low. It's 3 or 5%.
That's good. That's lower than Virginia. Yeah, Virginia, it's 10.
It's achievable. But even nationally, you know, that's a big deal. And so if anybody mm-hmm. calls and asks me who I plan to vote for, then he is, regardless from now on, he's the one I'm going to answer as. Because our goal here is get him on the stage. Get him on the debate stage. And that is our entire goal moving forward. I'm talking to all of you.
That is our goal as a podcast.
I've got my thumbs up on that one, my friend.
To get him on the debate stage, because
I am with you 157%.
And he had this quote, and I think I mentioned it before, but he had this quote a while ago saying that if the Libertarian Party is ever going to mean anything in America, this is the year to prove it. And I think that's right. This is the year when the most libertarian-leaning, quasi-conservative, something or other, disaffected people are going to say, hey, what about those guys? You know, this is it. Can he do it? Can he do it? Can he get 10%? Can he do better than 10% nationally?
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Nationally?
Okay.
I don't know.
Greg and Emily, what can he Greg and Emily, what can he take from you?
Oh, I don't think I think a libertarian from Clinton 6-5-3. I mean, not a lot. I mean, on all the issues, they're completely different. So if you were looking and you were zooming in saying, oh, well, I'm really into these issues, then no.
So I'll disagree on the social stuff because he's pro-choice. He's pro-legalized marijuana.
Okay.
There a lot of this, a lot of that get the government out of my personal life stuff. Like the social side of it, pro-gay marriage, gay rights. As far as I know, they think you can go to the bathroom wherever you want to go to the bathroom. So, I mean, a lot of that libertarian stuff is, if you just look at Republicans and Democrats, falls on the Democrat side. Because
that's true.
Telling me what to do there.
You are absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct. You're right. I would say maybe closer to 7 or 8 then. But I can't see more than 10. I really can't see more than 10. I mean,
M?
I'm thinking probably 6-7% for a libertarian candidate. And I think that it'll probably end up being a wash because I think there are a ton of Democrats that won't vote for Hillary, but probably won't be able to vote for Trump. And I think it's vice versa for Trump. So I think that this year, even though the Libertarians may increase their percentage, it will be a wash.
You know, and if the Libertarians ran a better campaign and really put more media out there, I think they actually could pump those numbers up to 15%, you know, easily. But that's not going to happen. You know, you might as well say, oh, gosh, if the Green Party was better organized, they could get their right. I mean, shit, it's just not going to happen.
I don't see a whole lot of Republican Green transference.
Right. Or
and well, I can see a little. I can see. Well, I mean, to be fair, it'll be easier for Mrs. Clinton to hang on to Democrats than it will be for Trump to hang on to Republicans anyway.
Right.
But I can, like Jonah said, I can at least see some logic in some Democrats who might be just, for whatever reason, really, really furious with Clinton, who may decide to go over to the Libertarian candidate, unless it's Austin Peterson. He will only pull from Republicans because of who he is. But Johnson, I think, can pull from some Democrats. And I think Johnson will be able to pull from a lot of Republicans, at least I think. But that's just me. The interesting thing is, again, because the Libertarian part, it is conceivable that the Libertarians might, they don't do what Democrats and Republicans do, which is mainly accept whoever the nominee picks as their VP candidate. So they may not go with Weld. But if they do go with the two of them, then it may, like I said, that may be the most executive experienced candidacy or ticket that's on offer, which would be an irony given what we normally see from Republicans and Democrats. So we have looking at how much time do we have? How much time do we have? We're at about 49, almost 50 minutes.
I think we
no,
did.
I'm still here. Oh wait,
I wonder if he passed.
I accidentally muted myself.
Oh,
I accidentally muted myself. No, I did not pass out.
Yes.
I'm not even nauseous right now. I just accidentally muted myself.
Well, I had this vision of you going da 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 da, and then just stumbling and passing out right in the middle of it. But
that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So we are actually at about 50 minutes, so we don't have a lot of time. So I think the one thing that The one thing that I find interesting is, and I'm actually not going to go with what with I'm actually going to go with the one that was eliminated because it's more interesting. The fact that we apparently killed the leader of the Afghan Taliban, because I kept hearing from the administration for years about Al-Qaeda this, Al-Qaeda that, and that's all good because nobody likes Al-Qaeda. We want them all gone. But Al-Qaeda this, Al-Qaeda that, ISIS that. I never heard about the Taliban as being the enemy, and suddenly we're killing their leader. So does this mean that we were lied to for 7 years, or does this mean that the administration finally figured out, oh, wait, the Taliban are actually the bad guys? Greg, you're the Democrat. I'll ask you first.
Chances are they were, I'll be quite honest, I, seeing as this happened yesterday, and I spent yesterday doing something, what did I do yesterday? I was working, picking weeds in a garden, so I didn't hear, and I went to church, thank you, Emily.
You're not a heathen, good.
No, not much of one. And I was babysitting. There must have been something going on. First of all, if we killed someone who we shouldn't have, the military doesn't like to talk about it. So there must have been some terrorist activity going on. I don't think we ever said, at least to my knowledge, that we were friendly with the Taliban. But
I wouldn't say, I'm not going to say friendly, but I was... Generally, when the administration, my impression was that when the president ever talked about people he really wanted to kill and people he really wanted to defeat militarily, the Taliban seemed to fall off the list after about the first year.
It's like it resurrected overnight all of a sudden.
Well, from what my understanding, I just looked up, he always had a $5 million bounty on his head. I mean, it wasn't like he was like, oh, okay, well, let's just ignore this guy. I mean, there was always, he was always wanted by the military. But do we talk about it all the time because ISIS takes up the news? Sure. There are many enemies in the thing. But no, I mean, I don't see a problem with the military celebrating our successes. I shouldn't say celebrating over a man's death. But no, I mean, it was...
It's the Taliban. We'll give you some room to maneuver on.
Yeah.
it's convenient, though, that we killed him 6 months before an election. Not saying that has anything to do with it. I'm just saying it didn't happen during the...
No, not at all. You're just...
Didn't happen
during
midterms.
You're just dropping a broad hint there, Em. Come
you
on.
Know.
No, it's not like we're going to find Saddam again or kill...
Of course, if my question is, if we have a $5 million bounty on his head, if a drone killed it, do we pay the drone?
I don't know. I think we might kill. We might pay the kid who was playing the video game at the time, perhaps.
Okay.
So we've had some really good conversation tonight. DJ got drunk. I'm still kind of in the Republican Party. And Greg and Jonah seem happy. So
I'm happy as a pig in mud. So things are going my way. All I know is that by the end of November, we're going to have a Democratic president. Woohoo!
Or a libertarian president.
Or a libertarian president.
Oh, that would be awesome. I will say, however, I did not need to get drunk to get happy. But it did help.
Gosh.
All right, can we end this with Trump vice president? We did that last week, Trump vice president picks, didn't we? Or should we do that again?
What about a parting thought or quote?
Oh, okay, go right ahead. That sounds fine.
I'll start. I'll start.
There we go.
This is not the year to be sober.
All right, Greg, you're up.
For all the Sanders people who have never voted for anybody other than Barack Obama, you need to realize this is not the most important election ever. It's just a primary.
I think similar to that, I wonder what will happen to the young voters. Normally, the young voters don't actually vote. And if this is the first time that you're old enough to get involved and you got involved with Bernie Sanders and you legitimately think that it's being stolen from you, what do you do next? Even if you're a liberal. That's what I'm wondering.
Wow. I don't know how I feel about you saying even if you're a liberal.
Well, if you grew up liberal and you're all about Bernie Sanders and you legitimately feel that the Democratic Party has stolen him from you, mm-hmm. where do you go next election? And that's, I don't think there's an answer right now. I'm wondering what they'll do. They'll either grow up and figure it out or they won't. And that'll be interesting.
Wait, stolen him? What are they, kidding?
Yeah, we're putting him in a bird sanctuary.
Is he in some basement in Washington, D.C.?
If they feel that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is an ass and has plotted to destroy Bernie Sanders from day one, then where do they go?
We have men to look at him. Top men.
Okay, so we're not talking...
Top men.
Top men. Okay.
Well,
gotcha.
I've got a little quote to end the night with. Nothing political, really, but... you know, every due day is a chance to change your life. So move forward and don't look back. Right, DJ?
That's right. And leave.
Yeah.
It's so liberating.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us tonight. Make sure you find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And if anyone would like to send liquor for our next show, just message us on Facebook, and we'll make sure to get you that address. So hope everyone has a good night.